Production and distribution of City Club Forums on IdeaStream Public Media are made possible by PNC and the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland Incorporated.
Good afternoon and welcome to the City Club of Cleveland, where we are devoted to conversations of consequence to help democracy thrive. It's Tuesday, March 12th, and my name is Ariana Smith, Educational Engagement Manager here at the City Club. As an educator and as an avid follower of the Ron Clark Academy social media page, I am so honored to introduce our guest today, Ron Clark, or as we like to call him, America's Educator. Ron Clark's outstanding success with students from low-wealth areas of North Carolina and New York City led him to be named Disney's American Teacher of the Year. He is a New York Times bestselling author, and his classes have been honored at the White House on three separate occasions. Ron's teaching experience in New York City are the subjects of the uplifting film, The Ron Clark Story, starring Matthew Perry, better known as Chandler from the TV show Friends. Currently, Mr. Clark serves as a teacher and administrator at the Ron Clark Academy, an award-winning and internationally acclaimed middle school in Atlanta, Georgia. The school serves as a training site for educators, and each year, thousands of teachers and administrators from around the world visit the schools to be trained in their methods to help all students achieve success. Today, we will hear from Ron Clark on his latest book, Move Your Bus, where he applies his successful leadership principles from the classroom to the business world. If you have a question for our speaker, you can text it to 330-541-5794. Again, 330-541-5794, and our City Club staff will try to work it into the second half of the program. Before we bring up Ron, please join me in watching this brief video.
Ron Clark, who fell into teaching by accident, turned underachievers into high achievers in a Harlem classroom, and in the process became an award-winning teacher, author, and even the subject of a made-for-TV movie.
You see this? This means that this year is going to be different.
Well, Mr. Clark, you were the only one that believed in me. So that's when I just started reaching out and everything. And he just really touched my heart, and I like that.
May I have the envelope, please? Ron Clark.
You saw a piece on the news about this school in Harlem. You didn't even know what school it was.
Right.
And you, white boy, got in your car and drove to New York City. Like, I'm looking for Harlem in that school.
You can do better. It's not acceptable.
Now, Clark's used his book royalties to convert a warehouse in one of Atlanta's poorest neighborhoods into the Ron Clark Academy.
One of the most exciting things about our school is that not only are we affecting the lives of our students here, but we're also inviting educators from all over the country and around the world to come to RCA and to be immersed in our environment and to learn about our methods and techniques firsthand. And then they're taking our ideas and strategies back to their classrooms all over the country and around the world to affect the lives of students everywhere.
The first time Mr. Clark jumped on the table, I was like, whoa. I was like, okay, what's gonna happen next? Because I've never seen a teacher jump on the table. I mean, I'm not even allowed to practically jump on my bed when I get home.
Students can be happy. Classrooms can be energetic. Schools can be fun.
And it's just magical. And the teachers put out so much passion into all of their lessons. And it's just fun every time you step in the classroom.
Before, school was like, man, I gotta go to school tomorrow. But it's, to me, this school is like, I gotta go to school tomorrow. Yeah, I gotta go to school tomorrow. Yeah. When can we go, Mom? Can we go tonight? Because the school is just so fun, and Mr. Clark has a great time teaching, and all the other teachers, they don't just act like they're having fun. They do have fun. They pour their whole hearts out into every single lesson.
It's been an amazing 4 years having the opportunity to do so many things I've never had, like the experience of doing.
Mr. Clark is indeed magical in every way possible.
Members and friends of the City Club of Cleveland, please join me in welcoming Ron Clark.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Hey, everybody. What's up? I really appreciate y'all letting me come here today. This means a lot. I was going through the book and seeing all the pictures of everyone who's been here at the City Club and all the dignitaries and all the politicians and the corporate people. And you asked a teacher to be here, and it means a lot. I'm really honored. Thank you so much for giving people a voice. It means a lot to us. And I'm excited to be here because of Huntington. Brant Standridge is someone who works with Huntington. I was speaking to him years ago, and he was talking about how Huntington really loves the community, how to get the community involved, how do we help communities. And I was like, that's what I'm trying to do. That's the whole thing. I was like, we got this in common. And so we came up with this idea to do this partnership, and we're really just honored of what's happening and the impact that it's having on communities. So really excited. But who am I? What do we do? Well, I'm from the country in North Carolina. Y'all are probably telling to open my mouth, the tractor falls out. I'm country. And no one on either side of my family had ever been to college. I was the first one to go. I went to East Carolina University. I worked 40 hours at Dunkin' Donuts all throughout my time in college. And to make a long story short, a teacher passed away at a local school. My mom said, Ron, you got to go teach. They lost their teacher, and they have a hard time getting teachers to go teach at this school. They have learning disabilities and problems and all kinds of behavior issues, and I didn't want to do it. But my mom twisted my arm. So I go to this school, talk to the principal, and the principal said, Ron, we need you. We got LD kids in here, ADHD kids. We even got some plain BAD kids. She said, and you are just the man for the job. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, what, you don't want this job? I said, no, ma'am. She said, then why are you here? And I said, my mama made me come. I don't want a job. But she walked me down the hall, and she showed me the classroom. And the class was going crazy. You kids will not believe this, but used to, they would draw circles on chalkboards and make kids put their noses and fingers in chalkboards to be disciplined. No one could get away with that these days. But this is what I saw. So three of these kids had their noses in the chalkboards, and the teacher was trying to teach her. Her wig was off to one side. She was floundering. And I looked down, and this kid looked up and said, is you going to be our new teacher? And I was like, I guess so. Because I'm a firm believer, if you feel something in your heart, you better do it. Come on. You only live once. You know, you don't want to look back and say, oh, I regret doing that. So if you feel something in your heart, especially if it deals with helping people, go for it. So I started teaching the next day. I didn't know what I was doing. It was a disaster. Kids were disrespectful. At the lunchtime, I got the kids to the lunchroom. I went and sat in my car and looked in the rearview mirror, and I had to talk myself into going back into the building. I was like, Ron, you're not gonna let 10-year-olds make you cry. You're gonna push through. And so I tried to do lots of different things. My worst discipline problem's name was Ronnie. Oh, is there a problem? Oh, my shoes. Look, if you only saw how many times I fall off desks every day, because I teach on the top of my desk, it's a bit of a crisis, but thank you, buddy, I appreciate you. And so I was trying to do all different types of things to get these kids to pay attention and focus. The worst kid in the class was named Ronnie Martin. He was a handful, but he played basketball at a rec league. So I went to his basketball game, and he came over, he said, yo, Mr. Clark, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to cheer for you, Ronnie. He said, you're here to cheer for me? I said, yeah, I don't know none of these people. I'm here to cheer for you, buddy. He said, all right. It was the worst game he ever had, because every time he would shoot the ball, he would look to see if I was watching. Every time he called the ball and passed, he would look to see. And I was clapping for him. He came in my class on Monday. He said, yo, Mr. Clark, you seen them skills, right? You seen them skills? I said, well, I saw the skills. Now, Ronnie was still a discipline problem that day for me. But whenever he would start his stuff, I'd be like, Ronnie, what are you thinking? He'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. He'd start doing rude things. I said, Ronnie, he said, oh, my bad. And I could pull him back. And I was like, I'll take it. I'll take it if I can pull them back. I said, I think I need to really invest in these kids. I started eating lunch with them. And look, eat lunch with the discipline problems. They are funny at lunch. It was great. And I started trying all these different things. And I'll explain to you exactly what I did a little bit later. But at the end of the year, I had the highest test scores in the building. And my principal said, Ron, you did it. This is incredible. Because I was at the poor school. There were six schools in the county. We were the po-po. We were the poor one. And all our test scores were last, but my class had the top test scores in the county. She said, how did you do it? And I said, I don't know. She said, well, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. I couldn't articulate it. And so she said, well, congratulations. Well, there was a teacher down the hall named Tracy. Now, her test scores were the lowest in the school. She came to me crying. She said, oh, my gosh. I said, don't worry. You come watch me teach. I'll go watch you teach. We'll work together. I'll mentor you, and we'll get these test scores great together.
At the end of the year, she and I had the highest test scores in the county. And the principal said, "Tracy, what did you do? How'd you get these test scores?" And she said, "I just did what he told me to." And the principal said, "Ron, sit down. What are you doing?" And that was the first time I really tried to explain what I do. So I'm going to sum it up for you now. It's much easier to show you, but you'll get the gist. If this is my classroom, I find my brightest student. And when I make my lesson plans, I think about her. What questions I'm going to ask, I think about her. Everything I do is geared toward my brightest kid because I felt like we're teaching this dumbed-down curriculum. This is too easy. These kids can do more. I said, I'm going to challenge my gifted kid, but then I'm going to expect everyone in this class to get to that level. But you can't just go into a classroom and make it hard and then sit back and go, everyone get there. I made it really hard, but then I engaged every kid. Every kid's got to be engaged the whole time because I have kids with learning disabilities, behavior problems. If I'm going to be teaching, here is my expectation for everybody. I got to keep you all excited. I started making it hands-on, using music, making it interactive, my depth of questioning, the speed of the lesson, lots of different things. Kids will come in my classroom walking slowly. So I went and got these balloons. I blew them up. Shh, shh, shh. I put one balloon on every desk with a magic marker. And the kids are like, "Oh, we're having a party." I said, "No, you got to get this balloon. You got to work out the math problem on the balloon. If you get it right, you can pop it." Just something a little exciting. I had this little container of sunglasses at the front of my classroom. If the questions got hard, I say, "You know what, y'all? We just need to be some detectives." I'd press my music, the Mission Impossible music, dun, 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 dun. And I'd put my sunglasses basket. The kids would pass out the sunglasses and put them on. I'd be like, "All right, Detective Brad, you see a clue. How can we start this problem?" So we would be detectives for a few minutes, and I'd take up the sunglasses when we were done. And the kids started saying, "Oh, we like Mr. Clark's class because if it gets hard, we just become detectives. Then we can all solve it together." So I started doing little things like that. I was teaching about World War I and World War II. I put up this big Venn diagram. And on the Venn diagram, I had World War I on one side and World War II on the other side. And I said, "Come on, y'all, what are the differences and the similarities in World War I and World War II?" And the kids were like this. I said, "Anybody, a similarity or difference, World War I, World War II?" So I said, "All right, y'all, repeat after me. World War I." And they're like, "World War I." I said, "1914 to 1918. World War II. And they were like, "World War II. And I was like, "1939 to 1945. I just did it a few times. The students had no reaction. They were like this. So the next day at lunch, I was eating with the discipline problems. And at the end of the table, I heard 1914 to 19. I was like, "Oh, they did my song! They did this song!" And when I graded the test, all the kids got it right. Even my low learners, 1914, 1918, 1930. I said, "Lord, is that jingle?" They memorized that jingle. I said, "I got to put more stuff to music." And then I started doing hands-on things. Like when you add two negatives, you get a bigger negative. Now when you have two negatives, you will get a bigger negative. And I would see kids taking the test, and they would go. And I was like, "Oh." And then, so I started all these strategies. And then I kept getting higher test scores. And so the principal said, "I want you to tell the whole school what you do, how you organize your lesson, the depth of question, how you are teaching to your gifted kid. I want you to explain it to the staff." So I stood up in front of the whole staff, and I said, "Oh, here's what I do. And here's what you need to do to go be successful in your classroom." And instantly, teachers were like this, "I don't think this will work, because I have kids with learning disabilities. I can't teach you the gifted kid. I've got to differentiate. I've got to..." And I said, no. I said, "You just got to keep them all engaged. Well, I don't know how to do that. And I don't feel like dancing. I'm not a dancer." I was like, "No, you don't have to dance or rap. There's 100 things you can do to be creative to get kids involved." And they said, "Well, I don't understand." And so I said, "Can you come watch?" I said, "Come watch." And so in our profession, it is unheard of for a teacher to go sit in another teacher's classroom. If a teacher goes to sit in your classroom, you'd be like, "What are you doing? Why are you here? That's rude. What are you doing?" It is taboo. Now, the principal goes into the evaluation, but teachers don't go watch teachers. What we do in our profession, you go in your classroom, and you teach in the way you were taught. And that's why our profession's not getting any better. Everyone's teaching the way they were taught 50 years ago. There's nothing inventive, creative. We're not dissecting our profession. We're not learning from each other. And so I said, "We have got to find a way for y'all to come in my classroom." And the principal said, "Okay, here's what I'll do." The principal said, "I will get everybody to come in, and I'll organize the schedule. So all the teachers came in and watched me, and when they would walk out of my classroom, they would say this, I get it now. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to try that. I got it. And so I said, darn, the key here is I just got to show people. And so I had this idea. I wanted to build my own school, a school where every teacher would teach in the way I'm talking about, and then we can invite educators to come in and watch. But I didn't know how to do it. We got invited to the White House 3 different years in North Carolina to be honored for what we were doing at the school. We went from the lowest scoring school in that county, 6th place, to 1st place because the whole school started teaching the way I'm trying to describe. Test scores through the roof. When you teach to the brightest, but everyone stays engaged and everyone wants to be there and you have relationships with all the kids, that's how it worked. Then I saw a TV show about schools in Harlem that have violence and overcrowded classrooms. And I said, Lord, I got a feeling in my heart. I know this works here in the country. Let me go see if this works in Harlem. So I drove up to Harlem and I found the school from the TV show. They had metal detectors, they had a hard time getting teachers to go teach there. And I was like, this it. This the school, this is where I'm supposed to be. When I got there, this kid came busting out of the side door. The resource officer was trying to pull this kid through the door, and they pulled this kid through the door and they took him. So I just slipped in the door after him and they took him. They sat him in the office and went to call his mom and get the principal. And this big 13-year-old kid was going, he was just furious. And I didn't know what to do, so I just sat down beside him, and he kept going, it's funny, I leaned over to him, and I said, you know what? I was breathing like that one time, and I passed out. And he goes, for real? And I said, yeah. So I started talking to this kid, and whenever I talk to the kids, I have a trick I do. I try to make sure nothing distracts me. The whole world vanishes. I just looked at the kid, and I said, buddy, tell me about your day. From the moment you woke up till now, I want to hear everything that's been going on. What led to this moment? And after 10 minutes, we were laughing. And he said, you're different. He said, if you were my teacher, I wouldn't get in so much trouble. I said, this is a sign. So I started working at that school. They made a movie about it. You know it's challenging when they had to make a movie about it. It was rough. Had 37 kids in the classroom. It was a handful. But I did the same thing that I did in North Carolina. I said, who's the brightest kid? I'm going to teach to him, and then I'm going to get everybody else engaged. I want them to want to be here, excited to get to this goal. Had the highest test scores in the district. Eventually, I was named as the American Middle School Teacher of the Year. I got to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Everything was blowing up. And she said, I want you to write a book. So I wrote a book called The Essential 55. It is about 55 rules I have for my students. Because I feel like there's a lot that my grandmama taught me that we're not teaching people anymore. Like, we're not teaching how to give a firm handshake. We're not teaching how to eat with proper etiquette. We're not teaching how to hold the door for people. We're not even teaching how to clap. And I looked around to see y'all clapping. When you clap like this, y'all make no noise. And is you the queen? No, don't clap like this. When you clap, you want to start with your elbows. You want to lift up your elbows, turn your elbows in the direction of the person you want to clap for, and clap like this. Mean it when you clap for somebody. So all these little things I wanted to teach my students. I had 55 of these things. So I wrote a book called The Essential 55. When the book came out, Oprah made it one of her book picks, and all the money went into a foundation, and we used this money, it was $840,000, to buy an old, nasty factory in downtown Atlanta. Now, this is Kim Bearden. Kim Bearden is the co-founder of the school, and she was the... Stand up for a second. So... Kim was the American middle school teacher for the whole country. She's in the National Teachers Hall of Fame. I ain't even in it. She in it. She's a Milken Award winner. She's an award-winning author. And so I called Kim and I said, Kim, you got to come to Harlem and start a school with me. And she said, I'm not going to move my family to Harlem, but come to Atlanta. I'll consider it. So I go to Atlanta, and we found an old factory in the second highest crime-rated area. There were crack houses on both sides and streetwalkers in front of it. And Kim and I said, this it. We're going to turn this old factory into the school. And now we've done it. We have built this school. And it is like Hogwarts. There's trap doors and secret passageways and flying dragons. And it's incredible. And tens of thousands of teachers from all over the world visit every year to sit in the class and to watch. So that dream I had 30 years ago of, I need to show you. I can't tell you. I need to show you what I'm talking about. We do that now. We went to all 50 states. 300 school systems to find the best educators in our country, and now they teach all in one building. They all moved their families to Atlanta. So when you come to our school, you're seeing education at its best. You're seeing creative, clever, inventive, how we question the depth, how you challenge kids, and we think it's important because the United States is currently ranked, well, as of 2 years ago, we were 41st in the world in math and science. Now we are 34th in the world in math and science. But that's embarrassing, y'all. We have the world's number one economy, number one military, number one infrastructure. When we are 34th in the world in math and science, where's our country gonna be? You know, AT&T, they just had that outage. And you know, our country said, we don't know what caused this. We don't know if it was a different country. We don't know what happened. But we are trying to figure out, don't put me on the TikTok. And we are trying to figure out what caused this outage. China had these balloons coming over our country. Our military said, we don't understand how these work. We have to shoot them down to figure out the technology behind these balloons. That's embarrassing for us. And then y'all just see this week what Putin did? He has bombs flying into the Ukraine with wings on them. There's wings on these bombs. And so, and we're like, we don't know how that, we don't have them. We ain't got no wing bombs. That's what happens when for the last 2 decades, we were 41st in the world in math and science. Somebody else is gonna be ahead of us. You know, Americans are funny because your whole life you've been told we're number one. Number one on cartoons you watch, books you read, TV shows, we're number one. It is drilled into our heads. Even when you watch the Olympics, you expect the American to win the gold. If an American wins a silver, you know what you say? Oh my gosh, there goes her Wheatie Box chance. There goes her endorsements. I know she's devastated. Look at the American when they don't win gold. It's because we expect to be number one in America. But if we watched an Olympics that dealt with education, we'd be 34th in the world, and nobody's doing anything about it. It's a crisis. And like y'all see when Donald Trump was running for president the first time, he said, if you elect me, he said, I will release all the X-Files. Everything that our government knows about UFOs and aliens, I think the American people deserve to know everything that we know. We shouldn't be keeping something from you. I think some people voted for him because they want to see them X-Files. So he becomes president, and they said, are you going to release the X-Files? And he said, I don't know. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. Which made people think, Lord, this man done seen these X-Files and decided there's something that in it that he can't release them. There must be something about aliens there if he decided not to release them. So they kept bugging him. So right before he left office, he signed an executive order. He wanted these X-Files to be released in 6 months' time, and they came out during Joe Biden's presidency. So raise your hand if you read the report. One. Raise your hand if you heard about the report. All right, some more. So we heard about it. Nobody even read it. You know why? Americans, we funny. We funny. Our government basically told us, yes, there are aliens, we have proof. And we're like, you see Ryan Gosling at the Oscars? He's saying that, I'm just kidding. It's so good, you see that? You see that movie, Saltburn? He got in that bathtub, they're nasty. So Americans don't even care that there's aliens. Our government, prior to our government releasing this report, they said, before we release this report, we wanna meet with all of the heads of different religious faiths. And they asked them, how are your followers gonna handle it? How are your American followers gonna handle this news when this report comes out? Americans didn't even care. So I'll tell you what the report said. It said there are 144 times that our military has filmed spacecrafts. We don't know where they're from. They put 3 sample videos on the YouTube. You can go watch it. These spacecrafts, they freeze in the air. They flip upside down. They take off. They go 10 times the speed of light. They go under the ocean, out of the ocean. You can go watch these videos on YouTube from our military, from our government. And then they said 90% of the time, these spacecrafts are actually over our military bases. So whoever it is, they're looking at our defense capabilities. But then the worst part was the last sentence said, we cannot confirm or deny that these spacecrafts are from another planet. Perhaps it's that China or Russia has some advanced technology that we don't understand yet. And then I thought to myself, we're 41st in the world. That's about right. Shouldn't there be things that we don't know that other countries would know when China and Russia are at the top of math and science and we're 41st in the world? And then as I travel around the country with my team and go to these 50 states and 300 school systems, we see teachers sitting down, passing out worksheets. It's a crisis. And I want to yell to the teachers, what are you doing? Get up and teach. We're 41st in the world and the aliens is coming. What are we doing? We've got to do something. But there are kids in schools in America bored to death. We have a shortage this year in America of 260,000 educators. They are leaving our profession in drones, in droves. In the 1960s, if you were a female and you were going to college, people would ask you this, are you going to be a teacher or a nurse? That's kind of where you were tracked. So we had a huge population of outstanding, phenomenal, intelligent people going into nursing and into education. Now it's dwindled. You can do whatever you want to do. So nobody's going into education. At our school, we talk to college students. I've been to Clemson University and Duke and Chapel Hill and UGA, and we talk to college students and we say, teaching is wonderful. Become an educator. And you know what they say? Well, if nothing else works out, I'll consider it. We are the profession where if I can't do anything else, it's my last chance, I'll go and I'll teach. Or they'll say this, my mom said she won't pay for my education if I become a teacher. She said, I can do anything but teach. And we asked, well, what does your mom do? She's a teacher at the local school system. And so we are not attracting the best and brightest into our profession. We are not doing it. And so when you don't have the best and the brightest coming, we're not going to be 34th or 41st. We're going to be worse. And our next war deals with math and science. And that is where we are at our weakest. And no one's doing anything about it. So at our school, we're trying to do something. What we do is we teach to the brightest. But you can't just go to your school and teach to the brightest. You got to fire it up. That's why we try to build the bridge. We build relationships with parents. We show teachers how to do that, how to handle conflict, how to work with kids, how to make it harder, how to structure your lesson. And a lot of it is just good old-fashioned good teaching. For example, raise your hand if at some point this morning during this session, if I looked you in the eyes. Okay, so this was good for me to know. So I've missed y'all. Buddy, I've looked at you like 18 times. Like 18 times I've looked right in your eyes. So, but this let me know something. I missed y'all. I'm sorry. I missed you. So I'm here with you now. As a teacher, I want to make sure I know that. So one thing that we do is so simple. We show educators how to look people in the eyes and how to talk to them. When y'all were talking, I moved in this direction, and they stopped. We show educators how, if you want them to stop talking, I could have said up there to y'all, could y'all please stop talking? It's embarrassing, it's drama, attention. So I just moved in this direction. They got the message. So a lot of what I'm doing today is I'm just showing how we teach. I didn't stand up there at the podium. I'm out here with you. I'm making a connection with you. These are small ways we build the bridge. We have a lot of things that we call at our school 1%ers. 1% things, because after the COVID, nobody wants to work as hard as they used to. And so I felt like if I went to my staff and said, yo, we're going to do 1,000 new things this year, I felt like my staff might be like, oh my God, we quit, we can't do it. And sometimes schools will send educators to us in Atlanta for us to train them. They're incredible. Sometimes they send the worst. And when those people come, they're like this. Because they're thinking, what am I going to have to do now? I'm not going to stand on some desk. I'm like, oh, it's not about standing on a desk. I'm not rapping a lesson. I said, it has nothing to do with rapping lessons. It's just about really good, solid teaching that I want to show you. I said, I'll say this. And honestly, y'all, we're going to show you some things at RCA over the next 2 days that are big 20% improvement things. You can go back and you might say, I want to do these big things. Then we're going to show you some 10% things and some 5% things. And then we're going to show you some 1% things. Because some of you might not have it in you to do more than 1% effort. So we're going to show you tons of these things you can do. I'll give you an example. I used to when I was giving the kids a test, the kids would all be sitting there taking the test and I'm doing this. I said, this is a waste of my time. So I started doing something where I would take out my phone and take a picture of a kid. I text it to the mom. She is working so hard on this test. I don't know if she's going to do well or not, but I just want you to know she's putting a lot of effort. You should be proud of her. Parents love that crap. I send that to the parent. I mean, parents love it. They're like, Mr. Clark, thank you. Capital letters. Thank you so much. I love you, Mr. Clark. It's just a little 1% thing you can do to let the parents know I see potential in the child. And I'm having to walk around that classroom anyway. One of my 1%ers, I went and bought one of them Glade plug-ins. You know why? You want your room to smell good because you want the 11th graders to say, I like this room. It smells good in here. People are attracted to those. We smile. When we teach, we smile. It's a 1%er. My whole staff does it. I ask my staff, come up with your own list of one percenters. And the lady who answers the front desk at our school is Renita Burns. She said, Mr. Clark, I can't be no more perfect. I said, what? She said, I can't be no more perfect. I already do everything I'm supposed to do. Because at our school, when you answer the phone, and whoever, whatever business, this is how you got to answer the phone. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It's got to be Disney World. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Like Ron Clark Academy. It's got to be that, mm-hmm. And they've got to smile the whole time. Because whoever answers your phone, it's the climate and culture of your business, of your school. They're the face of the school. They interact with everybody. She said, I already do it, Mr. Clark. I go, da-da-da-da-da-da. I said, well, why don't you say, Ron Clark Academy, this is Renita. Good morning. How can I help you? Tell them good morning. Tell them your name. She said, well, okay, that seems like 1%. I can do that. I said, and instead of saying, hold, please, why don't you ask them, could I put you on hold for 1 second? Thank you so much. Ask them if it's okay. So that's 1%, I can do that. I said, and every time a parent comes in, instead of sitting there and saying, sign in please, won't you stand up? Won't you walk over to the parent? Hug the parent, walk the parent over and say, oh, could you go on and sign in here? Then they take the parent, say, oh, if you could come sit right here, I'll go get your kid for you. Do that. And she said, oh, that's a lot of getting up and getting down. She said, that feels like more than 1%. I said, then scratch it off the list. We are not going to put something on our list that's more than 1%. I said, but maybe leave it, but only do it once a week. She said, okay, well, that feels like 1%. So she comes running up to me the second week of school. She said, Mr. Clark, I got to do it for every parent. I said, what do you mean? She said, I got to do it for every parent. She said, the parent came in. I stood up. I walked over. I hugged the parent. I took them over. I had them sign in, and I said, I'll take you over here to sit down. And the parent said, Miss Burns, I love you. Thank you, you made me feel so special. She said, I think I have to do it for every parent. I said, well, if you want to. And so at our school, we try to do lots of 1% things. I was in a 504 plan meeting. This is for a kid that has some challenges in terms of learning, sitting with the teachers and the parent. And the parent goes, well, Dr. P was my son's favorite teacher. And y'all, I was feeling a certain kind of way because I teach this kid. I teach 5th grade math, 6th and 7th grade history. I do 4th through 8th grade school-wide current events. So I'm still a full-time teacher. And I teach this kid, and I said, oh, really? Dr. Pugh's the favorite teacher. Well, what does she do that makes her be the favorite teacher? And she said, well, he made a 44 on her test, and normally he crumples up the test and puts it in the bottom of the backpack. But he came running home and said, look, well, I made a 44 on Dr. Pugh's test, but look, because she had gone throughout the test and written these little things that said, oh, you almost got this one right, buddy. I'm proud of you. I bet you'll get this one right next time. You did good on this section. You know how many times for the last 30 years I've put a 44 on the test and I gave it to the kid and said, get it signed. I ain't wrote no nicety. I ain't wrote no pleasant things. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've been missing an opportunity here. So I go to Dr. Pugh. I said, Dr. Pugh, I said, I can't believe this. You are now his favorite teacher because you wrote them things on the test. She said, oh, it was one on 1%ers. I said, what? She said, you know how you made us make a list of 10 things that could be 1% effort that would help kids? I felt like if a kid makes a 44, they're going to be feeling pretty low about themselves. I thought I'd find a way to lift them up a little bit, give them a little hope, let them see, I still see potential in you, so they don't see my class and that test as so negative. It's a powerful thing. So when educators come to our school, we show some big things you can do. You can transform your school, all these things you do with your lessons. But we also show lots of little 1% things that you can do. And as soon as I say that on the first day, teachers do this. Oh, thank you, because I'm exhausted. I ain't got no much effort anymore. I'm going to do these 1% things. But over the time with us, they see hundreds of things in all of the classes they can do. So they go back with a wealth of things that I don't have energy, but I can do these things to be better. So what have the results been like at our school? So for 17 years, we have 100% of our students have graduated high school. And that means a lot to us because... Most of our kids come from underserved populations. It's great. We have a third of our kids come where they've never been academically successful. A third of our kids have some behavior issues. A third of our kids, they're doing great before they even come to us. But the one thing they have in common is the income of the families. And not only do we have 100% graduation rate from high school, we have 91% of our students are in college or they've already graduated. And they're at Yale, Princeton, Morehouse, Spelman, Georgia Tech, Duke. But when they go there, they're killing it. They're the valedictorian. They're the student government president. They're starting organizations. So we feel like at our school, we found the secret sauce. And now what we do is we open our doors, and every week, It's not every week, but it feels like every week. It's normally like 2 or 3 weeks out of every month. We have hundreds of educators that come from all 50 states. They come from China, Finland, Russia, India, everywhere. There's a school in North Carolina, Chakwindi Primary School. They were struggling with test scores. And so they said, we're struggling. We're going to start sending educators to you. So 8 years ago, they started sending teachers to us, a few a year. Now, it's taken them 8 years, but finally they've sent their whole staff. And this year, they were just named as the second highest scoring school in all of North Carolina. They're an A-plus school, second highest test scores in the state. And they say, it's just because my teachers got to see y'all. It was a paradigm shift. They came back and they said, now I know how to question, how to structure my lesson. I'm gonna teach to my gifted kid. I'm gonna fire everyone up. And it's beautiful. That's what we do. Right now in America, we are teaching a dumbed down, wussified, coddled education system where everything is about the feelings of children, make sure everyone feels good about themselves, and we're lying to kids. We're saying, oh, you're all geniuses. You're all so smart. We're inflating grades. And you know why we're doing it? We're afraid of the parents. Because parents in America don't want you to challenge their kid. Parents want you to tell them that they're gifted and give them an honor roll certificate. That's all they want. When we've gone around the world, when you go to Finland, Japan, China, bam, 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 those schools are pushing kids. And we'll ask them, what do parents do when you challenge kids like this? They thank us, they know education is the answer. When you're told you're number one your whole life, you relax. You get cocky. You're arrogant. And that's where we are right now. And that's going to be our downfall. And parents will not let us challenge kids. We're raising this wussified generation where it's all about their feelings. But that's not going to help these kids be successful in capitalism. In capitalism, you got to know how to work hard. You have to have skills. And when you dumb it down, this is going to be the downfall of our nation. Don't we all want to have an educated society? None of us want to be in the rest home and have stupid people take care of us. We want to have an educated, powerful, strong society. So what we do at our school is we show people how you challenge these kids. Then you build a bridge, make it fun, relationships, how we deal with parents, and you get to this level. So last thing I'm going to tell you is that in our school, we have a symbol. We have slides that cut through our school. It's like if you're late for class, you go, oh, no, I better slide. And you go flying through the school. And if we know people are coming, we wax them suckers. They're good and fast. And so, but they symbolize what we're trying to do. We say to people, in America, our education system, we're taking the stairs. We're doing things the same way we've always done it. And we're watching the world catch up with us and start to pass us. We cannot keep taking these stairs. We've got to slide, take a different path, go for it. And when educators come, we ask them to get slide certified. And we tell them these slides are a symbol. When you cross your arms, get in a slide, and go on down, we're going to give you a sticker that says you've been slide certified, but it's saying you will go back and be part of this revolution. We have got to be number one in education. We've got to challenge kids. And you may say, I don't have it in me to do more than 1%, but you gave me a ton I can do. I'll go do those. But then some people say, I got 5% in me. And then someone say, I got 20%. Then someone say, I can do 40%. There was a teacher named Marissa Torres. She was in Texas. She went to her principal and quit in December. She said, I can't do it. I'm not effective. I don't know what I'm doing. He said, don't leave me in the middle of the year. He said, if you'll stay just till June, I'll send you to RCA for 2 days in January. She said, deal. So she came to our school for 2 days in January. At the end of the 2 days, she came up to Kim and me. She was crying. She said, you have now shown me what to do. This has just changed my life. I've never seen great teachers. I've seen all your staff. I'm going to go back and be better. She went back and changed her whole classroom. And in 1 year's time, she was named as the Texas Teacher of the Year. And so that's powerful. That is the impact that we're having at our school. We're changing schools, changing teachers, changing communities. But I'm sure you probably have some questions. And I'm sure you're wondering, well, we want to know more about this, and so you might have some things that, you know, you're, what, but how? And so I'm going to turn it over now to Ariana, and she's going to help moderate, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you.
We are about to begin the audience Q&A. For our live stream audience or those just joining us, I'm Ariana Smith, Education Engagement Manager here at the City Club. Today we are joined by Ron Clark, teacher and founder of the Ron Clark Academy. We welcome questions from everyone, City Club members, guests, students, and those joining us from our live stream via cityclub.org. If you would like to text a question to our speaker, please text it to 330-541-5794, and the City Club staff will try to work it into the program. May we have our first question, please.
Thank you for an excellent presentation. Appreciated it. And the insight that you provided on these
a 21st century war. I consider myself very anti-war. I hate the militarism of the world. But in reality, there are a lot of different wars going on at the same time. And the current global context, it's not tanks and airplanes and things like that. We're looking at fentanyl and bioweapons and chemical weapons and financial weapons and scientific weapons. And I'm glad that you provided insight on that. Could you provide more insight on these realities? Thank you.
Sure. So I think basically what I would say is that's why we have got to teach to the top. And I'm sure you're thinking, when you teach to the top, what happens to all the other kids? That's why you have to keep them engaged. You have to have ways to get parents involved. There's lots of things that go into it that we teach for our school to how to get them up to that level. But the key is, we cannot be 34th or 41st in math and science test scores. That's basically the key of it. And so that's what we do.
Hello, we have a text question. What advice can you provide for an educator that feels as though they have been teaching for several years and feel like they may be done teaching, but want to still impact schools and students?
Yeah, I think I'd go back to it. We get a lot of those. Y'all, however hard and bad you think it is teaching, it's worse. Kids these days, disrespectful. Parents are difficult. There's all this drama. And then we don't get paid very much. Kim was just telling me yesterday how if you work in Ohio as a teacher, your salary, you make, what is it, 15? So to this teacher's, to the point, you're not paying this teacher what she needs to live. You're not paying her enough. So she's not being compensated, but also she's stressed out. And she's probably a good teacher, because if you're asking for help, you're good. You know what she's going to do? She's going to quit. She's going to leave our profession. Just like last year, 260,000 educators left our profession. We are not recruiting the best and the brightest. We cannot get people to join this profession. In your schools, there are people teaching kids that you would not want teaching your own kid. I mean, schools are having to hire people that, I don't want to hire this person. It's the best option I have. It's a crisis. So to her, I would say, do the best you can to save yourself. Try to have a healthy life-work balance. We give suggestions like this. Like some nights I'll be at home, and my niece is like, will you please help me? I need tutoring. And then I've got a whole stack of papers to grade. And I'll say to myself, okay, I've got enough energy left tonight for one of these things. I can tutor her, or I can grade these papers. And I will take those papers, and I'll push them into the trash can. And then I'll go to class the next day and say, kids, I really enjoyed looking over the work. It really helped guide my instruction. But so we give little ways you can save yourself. You didn't have to grade all those worksheets. It's okay. But then at our school, we try to say, here are lots of little 1% things you can do that could bring joy to your life and could help you with kids, but it doesn't take more than 1% effort. That's one of the things people love most about coming to our school is, if you want big things, we can show you how to do big things. If you want small things, we can show you that as well. Yes?
Thank you very much. I wanted to know, in this age of distraction with social media, TikTok, Instagram, and everything, how do you find the energy to inspire a generation that doesn't even want to sit and read?
All they want to do is be on the TikTok. Look, let me tell you. So these kids, it's like, even for some of y'all listening to my speech, like, I could tell the kids in the room, hard for them to focus. Now, some, like, you locked in with me. When I look in the eyes of the kids, some of them, they can't focus because they're used to, oh, that's boring. It's one second. We're going up against TikTok. So when educators come to our school and I show them, here's how you make a hands-on, here's how you use music, and they say, I don't really want to do those things, we have no choice. You're competing with a TikTok brain. You've got to do this. Let's move it up. Now let's change this. Now look at this. Here we go. You've got to be able to move your lesson quickly to compete with that, because these kids, they're just very focused on this. You know what I hate so much? I hate our phones, because when I was a kid, if I wanted to learn something, I had to find the encyclopedia. And I had to memorize it when I found it, because I didn't know if I was going to ever have that encyclopedia again. Now, if you want to know something, you just look at your phone. We have trained our brains, you don't need to retain information, I can just find it here. So when your memory weakens, your brain capacity weakens. We're getting dumber because we don't need to use our brain as much, because the brain is here for us, and that's a challenge. Yes?
We have another text question. Do or have you had any scholars return and teach at the academy?
So years ago, I had a student named Zion. So we take all different types of kids at RCA. A lot of public school teachers recommend this is a kid who I think needs your school. So this is a kid who we met, and he said, I don't want to come to your school. I'm not coming to your school. You can't make me come to your school. And so I said, okay, that didn't go well. Let me go to his apartment. So we go to his apartment. I walk in, and he goes, I already told you I'm not going to your school. And I saw Connect Four was in the floor. I said, oh, you have Connect Four. I said, are you good? He said, yes. I said, you want to play? He said, all right. So for an hour, I sat in the floor with Zion, and we played Connect Four. And after an hour, we were laughing. I said, so you think you'll come to our school? He said, I'll come to your school. So he came to the school. He did a really great job at our school. When he left in eighth grade, we got him a full scholarship to go to a boarding school. He got tracked into Princeton. So he went to Princeton. Then he's at Harvard now getting his graduate degree. And I met with him 3 months ago. He took me to lunch. He said, can I take you to lunch, Mr. Clark? I said, sure. He said, I've been thinking a lot about my future. I said, well, you can do anything you want. You've got a graduate degree from Harvard and Princeton. What do you want to do? He said, I want to have a Connect Four moment with a kid like you had with me. He said, I want to be a teacher. So I hired him. So I hired him. So he'll be working at the school in the fall as a teacher at RCA. Yes.
Hi, Ron. Welcome to Cleveland. I wanted to ask, I saw a parallel between you and what I would see is Maria Montessori's life in a lot of ways. She never intended to educate. She was the first woman doctor. She was given the kids that were told they couldn't learn. She turned them into the highest, you know, test takers in Italy. But she met resistance, right? When you change and you confront a system, there's that resistance. I was just curious, what resistance have you seen? Because, you know, we're all here. We're like, yeah, this is great. We all want this in every school. But we know the story is always there's an obstacle. What is the resistance you're seeing, and how do you see us overcoming that?
Sure. So we've been very blessed. So when people come to our school, they expect to see this, standing on desks and rapping lessons. And that is like a sliver. That may happen at our school, but really what we do at RCA, you're watching really great teachers. Some of them are reserved and mild-mannered. Some are clever and creative. They're just the best we could find in our nation. And you're watching really great, solid teaching, good questioning, depth, structure, pace of the lesson, relationships, eye contact. You're seeing all of these things. So no one comes to our school and goes, well, this doesn't work, or this is a bad idea. Everybody who comes are like, oh yeah, that's very effective. You're showing incredible teaching strategies. So we really haven't had a superintendent or somebody say, that won't work here. That's why so many people love our school, because we're giving you something that you can't get anywhere else in the world. That's why they come to our school from Finland, China, Russia, India, Argentina, because nowhere else in the world can you just sit in a building and watch incredible teachers teach. It's unheard of in our profession. In your own school, like I said earlier, you don't even go look at the teachers teaching in your own building. So we really haven't had a lot of resistance. This is the hardest thing we've had. When you want to change your school, we can do it. We have done it thousands of times over. We can change your school. We can make your students happy. We can make your teachers happy. We've done amazing things. But when a principal says, well, these are my six worst, let me send my six worst teachers there, that's harder for us. We can make an impact. But what's really powerful is when you send me a principal and their five best teachers, then they go back and that starts it. That is gonna have much faster, bigger impact. So I think our biggest challenge is when they send us the worst and the best haven't been yet. Yes.
Hi, there. I'm a retired high school media specialist. Woo! And my question is, I'm trying to figure out how to ask it. In this particular school, the children in, just say for example, the cosmetology class, they can do the hair, but they can't pass the state exams, written exams now. So do you have any techniques for teachers, or you work with teachers, say out of the traditional classroom, to help those teachers? Things were working well, I know, but the person who worked there retired, and now they're really struggling to get those children to pass the state. exams, and they can, like I said, they can style and all this, the hair, and make it look pretty, but they just can't get that.
So, two things. Number one, the philosophy of our school is different from what we do in America. No one in America is teaching the gifted kids. Gifted kids are not being challenged. They're just chilling. Our goal is that I want my gifted kids every day to kind of be drowning. Like, I don't quite understand. I've really got to focus. I don't want them drowned on the bottom of the ocean, but also don't want them in a jet ski. So I'm trying to make them drown, but then I'm holding every kid up to that standard. So the work at our school is hard, but I want everyone to get involved and engaged. So when I have kids who might have learning issues or kids who struggle with test taking, what I'm doing is opposite of what everyone else is doing. I'm going to teach you the brightest kid, but I'm going to help you get there. And what we have found is test scores increase for all the kids when you teach to the gifted kid. He's struggling. If I slow everything down to his level, when I teach to his level, I'm not going to help him. He's not really going to grow. Expect more of kids who have learning challenges. Expect more of them, but then you got to love them, work with the parent, make it hands-on, make it engaging. You got to get there. So that is kind of the concept. But the second part of it that we do really well at our school, and one of the things people love to see, we show kids how everything is real world. For example, we just had something called the Mall Math Marathon. Kids struggle with math. They have to go to the mall, they get a certain amount of money, and they have to go shopping. They're trying to get it on the penny. So they go in all these stores, and all the stores, and the stores here in Cleveland would do it too, the stores work with our school. So the kids go in and they shop with fake money, but they're actually shopping, they have their budget, what can I get, what uniform. And so we do a lot of things at our school. There was just an activity they were just doing yesterday with Willy Wonka, where it was all Willy Wonka in the movie, but it was all for our eighth graders, themed with math that's in the movie Willy Wonka. We try to make it hands-on, real world, so they're applying it. So kids who may not like math will say, oh, this is important. Oh, this dress is $70, but it's 40% off. How much am I going to pay for that dress? It's $70 dress. It's 40% off. How much am I going to pay for that dress? This is why we're 41st in the world in math and science. Here's why we show our kids. So you know what? It's 40% off. So what percent do you pay? If you don't pay 40%, what percent do you pay? 60%. What's 60% of 70? It's just 6 times 7. Mm-hmm. It's 42. We show them little tricks, how to go shopping, how to make sense of it, so it's real-world application. I just proved to y'all the problem. Okay. Yes.
Oh, hi. I taught in Cleveland 40 years, and I am now on the State Board of Education. Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
And in Ohio, our legislature makes conditions worse instead of making teaching a profession that people actually want to go to. For example, now in Ohio, 18-year-old high school graduates can sub in schools. And so my question to you is, your energy is wonderful. I love it. Do you spend any time advocating for the survival of public education in front of legislators?
I used to. So when I was named the American Teacher of the Year, they had me do all different types of things in D.C. for the Department of Education. And I found that the people in the Department of Education are not former teachers. I was like, oh, these are business people. They don't really know what's going on. And so if you want me to really tell you the honest truth of what I think's happening, I don't think anyone in our government cares that our education system is struggling. And if you want me to tell you the real reason, this is capitalism. What do you need for capitalism to work? You need consumer. See, artist, you my smartest. I thought you were the lowest, and artist, you my smartest. So in order for capitalism to work, what do all these businesses and companies need? Everyone needs consumers, okay? Now, do you want to have an educated consumer or an uneducated consumer? Uneducated. Because an uneducated society, they'll buy everything. They'll believe what you say. They'll believe your commercial. They're susceptible. And so our government right now, no one is pushing to say, because y'all, they could. Look at all the money they just put in Ukraine. They could pay teachers more, easily pay teachers more with that money. We can make our schools better. they're not doing it. There's got to be a reason, and it's perhaps the reason that sometimes an uneducated society is easier to control. Yes?
Hi, what motivates you to, like, get up every morning and teach these kids?
What motivates me to get up every morning to teach the kids? Stories like Zion's, stories where I've worked with some kids that are handfuls, and I have seen if you do it the right way, you can change the life of a kid. And so that kind of inspires me to want to keep doing it. Teachers like Marissa Torres in Texas, who was going to quit, but now she's doing a phenomenal job in Texas. Stories like that help me to keep going. Yep. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron Clark, for joining us at the City Club today. Forums like this are made possible thanks to generous support from individuals like you all. You can learn more about how to become a guardian of free speech at cityclub.org. Today's forum is a part of the City Club's Building Success Series in partnership with Huntington. It is also part of our Education Innovation Series, thanks to support from Norton, as well as a part of our Authors and Conversation Series in partnership with Cuyahoga Arts and Culture and Cuyahoga County Public Library. Thank you to each of these organizations for their support of the City Club. Please join me in welcoming our students from MC Squared STEM High School and Wycliffe High School for joining us as well today. We would also like to welcome guests at the tables hosted by College Now of Greater Cleveland, Cuyahoga Arts and Culture, Horizon Education Centers, Huntington Medical Mutual, Huntington and North Olmsted City Schools, Norton, Open Doors Academy, and the Young Entrepreneur Institute. Coming up at the City Club on Friday, March 22nd, Dr. Lisa DeMore, author and thought leader in adolescence and child development, will lead a conversation with Lauren Steinberg on how parents can grow together with their children beyond their teenage years. What it will take to effectively parent, support, and build a more effective bond with your adult child during these challenging times. You can learn more about this forum and others at cityclub.org. And that brings us to the end of today's forum. Thank you once again to Ron Clark, and thank you to members and friends of the City Club. My name is Ariana Smith, and the forum is now adjourned.
For information on upcoming speakers or for podcasts of the City Club, go to cityclub.org. Production and distribution of City Club forums on IdeaStream Public Media are made possible by PNC and the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland Incorporated.